To True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. Once again, Coins Plus is the sponsor of True Wealth. True Wealth has been on the air, I don't know, 13 years or so. Coins Plus has been in business over a couple decades. We are always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins, precious metals, where we buy scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, all kinds of stuff that are, you know, small, compact things. If you have collections or estates, we can take care of you there. We're very, extremely knowledgeable, very professional, and we do our best to treat people well and do the right thing. We do get busy, and sometimes that can cause a little bit of a road bump or a hiccup. It's frustrating for people sometimes when we can't get to them right away, but it's just the nature of the beast at certain times. We're doing good. We've had some staff changes, some ups, downs, and sideways, and different things going on, and we're working through all that, and that's just the nature of owning a business for 25 years. I've never had at one time as many people that were in challenging situations at the same time, but, you know, it was inevitable. I've always had a pretty good skating rink, I guess, as a business owner, so God's answering prayer. Things are good. Nothing bad. All is well. And we're you know, doing our best to treat you well. And, I mean, it doesn't, to most of you, it's invisible. We're extremely busy and praise God for that. He's been very good to us. And we really believe in what's going on in the world as far as, well, we believe in what we do relative to what's going on in the world. I kind of believe in what's going on in the world, too. You got the old Trump thing that everybody is so familiar with, and it is not exactly the easiest thing. Politics is interesting, folks, because Trump has learned to play the game, okay? And what I mean by that is, you know, he's like, oh, it's a farce, it's a hoax, it's fake news. Well, you get this crazy media, right, that are out there with the absolute most extreme case of, you know, everything you're not supposed to be. They think the worst about everybody. They look for the worst. They assume the worst. They twist everything to the worst. They behave, especially news anchors on TV, they behave as if they're extremely highly offended by everything. So if Trump comes out and goes, look, folks, this coronavirus is really a bunch of pooey hooey, okay? And that's a really professional term you probably haven't heard, because that word would only come out of the mouth of the best, world's best doctors. But, you know, we've seen, like, over the last week or couple weeks, they have just been pumping fear into our minds, right? Coronavirus dysfunction anxiety disorder is what we should call it. It's crazy. It's this false pandemic that a false pandemic fear, I'll call it, that's circulating through our news and social media. No one is allowed to think for themselves. No one's allowed to say, hey, maybe we should be level-headed. Maybe we should look at the facts of what this is all about. You need to be, you need a thoughtful alternative to unreasonable fear. I even was talking to a very good friend of mine this weekend who I respect greatly. He's got a father who's considerably older, and he's concerned. I mean, he's frankly concerned that his father, who lives on 300 acres above him, will get the coronavirus. And so he's, you know, taking all these measures and precautions to try to load up on food and whatever else to protect his father. Because when it does hit elderly people, it's hard on them. It's, you know, according to a lady that I've spoken to who has extremely advanced knowledge in immunology and has worked for a large organization that actually tampers with the genetics of viruses and bacteria, but for the purpose of destroying themselves. They reproduce and sterilize and kill the population. But she said, of course, with the same measure, you will see various agencies, primarily governments, using these things for biological weaponry. The coronavirus broke out right near biological creation and testing lab in China. The H1N1, I think it was called the bird flu virus, broke out across the street from the Naval Biological Testing Center in Texas at a cafe. I mean, are these accidental? Are they on purpose? Stories I've heard from, again, the lady I was talking to, that the government will release these things for people to test. I mean, you go back, that might sound obnoxious. It is. But it may sound far out, too. It's not. There's documentation. The Freedom of Information Act, many things are only confidential for 50 years. The Freedom of Information Act has released to us that our own government, the CIA, has done countless practices of intentionally releasing viruses and different fatal bacteria, biological weaponry, and just disease in general, into the general population. In the South, back, you know, I don't have the dates, maybe in the 30s, maybe 50s, they released syphilis. They went down and took over all these medical offices in highly black areas, released extreme cases of syphilis. So these people, these black people, which is terrible, but that they would do this, but they would go into the doctor, they'd be sick and getting sicker. The doctor would, quote, monitor them, give them false placebo medication, and watch them get sicker and sicker and sicker so that they could get some nice studies done out of this stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with some of the heinous, hideous, rotten, terrible things the Nazis did, but the sad truth of it is they learned a lot of this from us. And there's a book I read, a number of them, but a long time ago, I think there's like 66 documents the government does not want you to see, by Jesse the Body Ventura, the old 1970s WWF guy. Sounds crazy. Well, he ended up being the governor of Michigan. And, you know, he's was in the first Navy SEAL squadron ever, went through all the CIA training, extreme at the time, beyond ridiculous, made him one tough bugger. And then he'd been, you know, in combat, Vietnam, everything. The guy's pretty legit, pretty well connected. Once they go into that level, you know, they get the highest levels of government clearance. And from there, he knows how to access various information, and he released it years ago. And so this isn't outside of the potential norm. In this case, there's an extremely high likelihood that this is all a farce, a pre-run, a test, okay? There's just a lot of history behind this. There's a lot of evidence the government wants to do this. The thing about it is, even Bill Gates said a while ago that we need to increase the vaccination rate. And in the same sentence, he said, because we have to reduce the world's population. And he's at the highest of the high. I mean, maybe he's connected with the connected. But, you know, of course, later on, oh, you know, it's a Freudian slip. I don't think so. I really don't think so, because what is going on right now with this coronavirus? Something interesting I'll get to here in a sec. One thing in general, let me get back to here. I'll get some numbers for you. This is on a different page, but $8.3 billion is going to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control $8.3 billion, okay? Why? Do we need it? Nope. Why would they want that? Power. Our government is now using the coronavirus, COVID-19. They're using it to acquire their largest funding ever over nothing. Why? What do they need? Are they just doing so much terrific research that we are just going to have the best statistical knowledge on disease and they're going to help cure? No. They are going to develop and begin distributing far more vaccinations and immunizations to our children and you. If you like that flu shot that everybody offers you every time you go to Walgreens or Rite Aid or your doctor or your clinic or anywhere, do you want a flu shot? Do you want? Well, I went in a while ago. I needed something. I had a little cyst in my mouth I had to have dealt with. I'm not kidding you. I have to go to Kaiser Permanente, which is a co-op. Really, you know, you can imagine. That's what Obama did to health insurance, by the way. It cost me three times what Cadillac insurance cost me 10 years ago. And it's not at all what that was. Everything's in-house. And a lot of people are, you know, a lot of the people working there, they're all salaried. And they pump you through like a number. But I started at Kaiser, then I had to go to a specialist. I'm not kidding you. I got hit up for no less than probably five different kinds of vaccinations. I got hit up for the flu twice and then three others and then another. I don't even know what they were. They were crazy. Tetanus. Do you want your tetanus? Do you want, I mean, on and on. I'm like, no thanks. No thanks. No thanks. No thanks. Our children were not vaccinated and they are both extremely healthy. Our grandchildren are the same, extremely healthy. I know of an individual who I've dealt with recently in a fair, you know, fairly strong amount. He happened to be the guy that a few years ago, he moved him and his daughter. His wife stayed behind in their old state. He moved him and his daughter to a new state. The wife was selling the house and coming up. He lived in a state, Texas, that had an open policy on vaccination. In other words, religious exemption was good enough, okay? Then he moves to this other state, which you would expect, you know, maybe to be a little more flexible, Utah. You've got people with, you know, hopefully some belief in religious liberty there. I would expect that they would be as strong as anyone, but apparently the state has a zero tolerance policy. So this father, friend of mine, him and his friend went through the system to try to, I guess, say, object, override, petition, appeal, whatever you want, these immunization acts, which, by the way, religious exemption, I mean, that, my friends, is in the Constitution. They need to really take a close look at that. It needs a case to go to the Supreme Court soon. Because the fact of the matter is now, we're getting into what's called a utilitarian mindset. In philosophy, utilitarianism is the belief that what is greater for the whole is greater for the individual. In other words, if killing you will save three lives, then it's good. And this is the new concept to eliminate the inconvenient. It's basically, selective cutting, I guess you will, it's like, yeah, that's what it is. It's like going through a forest and doing selective cutting. They used to do clear cutting. That's what the Nazis did. And that's just too blatant. You know, it just looks too obvious. And it's like my daughter would say when she was little, that's just too violent. And now they have their own methods and techniques. Does it sound conspiratorial? Yeah. Is it true? Yeah. And so we need to be really aware that we've had an entire philosophical mindset change overall. Utilitarianism. It says, just a quick dictionary. I don't know if this is the accurate dictionary, but it sounds close to me. the doctrine that actions are right if they are useful or for the benefit of a majority. Does that sound familiar? Utilitarianism is democracy. Listen to it again. Here's another one. The doctrine that an action is right insofar as it promotes happiness, and that the greatest happiness of the greatest number should be the guiding principle of conduct, right? Well, first of all, who's, the greatest happiness of the greatest number? Well, in some cases, many people fall into line where they do what they're told. I mean, they don't know any better. When you control the media and the government and everything else, people aren't even getting good information. You can persuade people to vote or to make decisions along any lines you want if you have the media on your side. Mike Bloomberg tried to buy the election. The problem with him was PR, personal relations. It was marketing. He did not make himself look good, and he was too arrogant to prepare for debates and speeches, and he just thought if he stood up there and talked like the master in his little world, this is the problem, okay? When we get these guys in these little worlds that everyone around them bows to their feet, no matter what, they think they start to think they're deities. This goes all the way back to the pharaohs of Egypt. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And people, you give a little bit of power, and they become very corrupt. I just watched a little movie the other night about that Richard Jewell, 1996 Atlanta bombing. The Atlanta Olympics is this kind of, run-of-the-mill guy, maybe a little bit below average, a really gung-ho security cop, found this bomb, just had this weird instinct, really overtrained for his job, extremely knowledgeable, great eye, way too serious. He found this bag with a bomb in it, and word got out. He got everybody cleared out. The bomb blew up. He went after, he was trying to clear people out along with the police, and boom, they go back. They're trying to find who planted the bomb. Pretty soon they're going after him. But here's the problem. The FBI, there was an FBI agent at the Olympics at the time who was in charge. Well, this went off on his watch. He wasn't going to let it by. They had to hang somebody. And this Richard Jewell, who was started out as the hero, suddenly became the victim. He became the criminal. And they did everything they could to destroy this man's life, despite the fact that he saved many. My point, the FBI, as we've seen time and again, has extraordinary power. They walked into this situation. You had the local police, sheriff, highway patrol, you had ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, all this stuff. Firearms, that's it. They were there, and the FBI guy, he just trumped them all. He said, no, this is a federal crime. It's our jurisdiction. And everyone argued, and he said, too bad, I'm the FBI, go away. It's the most, not only the most powerful organization in the United States, it's the most powerful law enforcement agency in the world. There is an insane amount of power abuse in those situations. And that's the problem we see with the media and politicians. I mean, to the point where Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, can go out, the Senate minority leader, goes out and he literally threatens two Supreme Court justices and then he doesn't even apologize. I mean, it's so pathetically blatant that no one would ever argue it, but the thing is, he gets away with it. This is power, folks. This is not what our founders designed. We have so much baloney that gets fed our way, it is absolutely, we buy it all, you know. He threatened Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. I mean, you go listen to the threat, and it is absolutely 100%. It's a threat on their life. That should never happen. That's power they're abusing. They've come after Trump. They can't win. They use all this. They want their way. They're super overbearing. They're terrible. I mean, I'm frankly, and I'm a, you know, I'll lean partisan political. I, you know, one thing, I talk to people on both sides of the fence, and they're blinded. I'm going to tell you, I was not a fan of Obama, and I know many of you have heard that over the years. And I would argue policies, but I didn't have the vitriol. I did not like what he was doing to our nation at all, and I completely opposed him. But the bottom line was, it came down to the next election. Well, these guys, they don't care. And here's what's worse. They've got people that are convincing them they're prima donnas. They don't care what you and I vote. They don't care what the people want. They know better. These are extreme elitists. And there is a history in this country, this world, and the history of the globe. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And men have done heinously terrible, rotten things to other men. Atrocities throughout time that you can't even imagine. Muslims are a classic. Socialism is a classic, because socialism and communism are the same thing. One is the theory, one is the practice. Guess what? Utilitarianism. That is when they convince the population that the greater good is to destroy the successful out of their positions, because people are struggling financially. I want to, you know, as a quick side note, I want to go over this coronavirus thing, but I just want to kind of kick you something here. Where'd it go? I think this might be it. Well, maybe I'll find it later. I can't. I got this email that was kind of interesting, and I don't have it in front of me right now. Oh, here it is. So Bernie Sanders, minimum wage. Bernie Sanders said at the debate last week that he wants minimum wage around $15 an hour. So if you figure, for, you know, $15 an hour, 60 hours a week, or I mean, how about that? $15 an hour, 40 hours a week, that's $600 a week. Figure there's 52 weeks in a year, that's $31,200 a year. Then he says he wants free health care for all. When they asked him how to pay for it, his answer was to raise taxes, listen to this, to 52% on anyone making over $29,000 a year. Okay? Now he's saying minimum wage brings you up to $31,200. He wants to tax you at 52%. If you're making over 29 grand a year, which is pretty much anybody in America, then and so 52% of $31,000 is $16,224 in taxes. Well, $31,200, and then, you know, so basically that leaves your take home pay at $14,976, $288 a week, which is $720 an hour. That doesn't count Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, any state or local income taxes, etc. Okay? Now, even if that tax was not applied retroactively all the way back to the beginning, you still have a situation where if you get a couple that say that when he said over 29,000 a year, you know, you'd pay 20 or 52% tax. Well, what happens if you get a couple and they're each making minimum wage? $62,400 a year, okay? Married filing jointly. At that point, you can subtract off $29,000. Usually on married filing jointly, even if they give you 150% income credit, that's $29,000. Don't let me confuse you. Times 1.5, 43.5. Subtract that from the two $15 an hour wages, which is $62,400, $18,900. If you pay a 52% tax on that, right, and then you're paying your normal 22 or 23% on the 40, you're basically paying $20,000 in taxes. That's just federal, according to Byrne, not Medicare, Medicaid, you know, Social Security, FICA, all that, right? At that point, out of $62,000 a year, you're paying $20,000 of taxes a year. For a married couple making minimum wage each, that's, you know, that's like I said, that's 32%. So essentially what happens at that point, you're dropping them back down to about 10 bucks an hour. And plus, like I said, all your other taxes. And then they end up back, believe it or not, you add in your FICA, your Medicare, your SSI, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and, you know, it depends, you know, workman's comp, L&I, depends on, you know, the employer's got to pay it. That's a whole nother story. There's another facet to that I won't get into. Local, state, and income taxes. Washington's one of the few without an income tax, but our sales tax is a stinger, you know, and you start to back that off and you're all the way back to $7 and something an hour. Socialism doesn't work. It's absolute foolish stupidity. People vote for this stuff because they want free. Get over that. Get the word out. People say, I've had people say, I like Bernie. He's got great ideas. What ideas? Ask questions, folks. Just ask. Just shut your mouth and ask questions. Let people talk. The minute they start talking and babbling and making no sense, ask another question. But let that question go down the lineage of what they're babbling about. Because they don't know what they're talking about, because there's no way to righteously defend this. Justify. It's unjustifiable behavior. It's unjustifiable economics. It makes no sense whatsoever. We are being deceived. Will he get in office? I mean, short of an absolute, complete, and total fraudulent collusion, no. This time, Bernie's going to be old and gone. Trump will be president again. That's what I'm expecting. I will tell you, if you think there's even a 10% chance Bernie's getting in, you better run out and get your precious metals now, because they will go through the mountain like you have never seen, through the rooftop, as well as your guns and everything else. And I'm telling you, the thought process of these people, they're so desperate to get into power, which we're talking about. They are willing to give up everything that you have. They're willing to spend your money. They're willing to promise your taxes. And you are foolish, especially if you're a college kid. You're like, oh, free student loans, free college. Hey, what a great deal. Well, I'll tell you one thing, 100%, never, ever, ever will they come through with that. Never. There's so much of our government dependent on that $1.8 trillion, folks. I know these numbers don't even make sense probably anymore. And some people are really bad with numbers. I think they had on NBC News here lately. You know, they were talking about $500 and some million that Bloomberg spent, which is actually not accurate. He spent $1 billion. But they said $520 million. And then they said there's only 300 million people in the U.S. So they calculated that out to $1.6 million a person. Did you catch that? This was on public news. $500 million, 300 million people. When you have the same number, 500 million, 300 million, you can get rid of the million. 500 divided by 300. You can go as far as 5 divided by 3. But essentially, you're dividing that out. If you go 5 divided by 3, that's the same as 5 million divided by 3 million. It's $1.66 a person, not 1.6 million. That was the math that shows up on the news. And it went through and it cleared itself. And that is exactly the problem with where we're at. The journalistic integrity is absolutely gone. And then they rant and rave and carry on about, you know, everything like that. So this whole thing with Bernie, this is just one minor little thing that a friend sent me. And it just tells you, you know, what, I mean, power. They want power so bad. Every one of these politicians now get megabucks. Bernie flies around in a Gulfstream 5. I mean, folks, this is a $50 million plane. If it gets run a fair amount, it costs a couple million dollars a year, minimum. Just in operational costs, not counting depreciation. And, you know, there's a lot more that goes into keeping an aircraft flying, but just that alone, you, whatever. It's absolutely this Mr., you know, I want everybody to be poor so that we can spread the joy, spread the wealth, spread the fun, whatever you want to call it, is an absolute farce. It's just to be contrarian, contradictory. That is a spirit we're starting to see a lot of. The spirit of common sense and logic and wisdom is going out the window very quickly. I had a talk today with another individual over some business expenses that were not being represented properly. And believe me, there was no room for debate. And when we were discussing the math, he kept saying, "Well, Kevin, I'm not going to argue the math with you." And it was I this and me that and I do this and my business is like that. And, hey, you're getting a good deal. And, hey, it's like, no. We have a deal. We've been friends a long time. We got a deal. You're supposed to be charging me this price with this kind of a margin in it for what I buy. Well, you know, I found out that wasn't the case. And so they changed the definition. So, you know, you look online at the definition of that type of a contract. I'm right. But, you know, that seems to be the new thing, the moving target. Logic and rationale, not so popular anymore. Everything's emotional. There is no right and wrong. If people don't like hard imperial facts, good luck. That is a very tough debate, frankly. Let's see here. I was just looking down. There's an interesting list of all kinds of terrible, horrendous genocide that's been committed by Islam. I wasn't going to get there right. All alarmed and all worried and all, you know, freaking out about this coronavirus is going to take them down. And they're, you know, it's just, it's rationale. It's going crazy. I talked about the $8.3 billion. I mean, man, I don't even know if you guys can comprehend this anymore. These numbers are so ridiculous and meaningless to us. These are dollar amounts that are huge. Now, think about it. So what happens now? I was talking a minute ago about this friend who I bounced out of that nicely in Utah, who fought about his daughter getting vaccinated after he went through the whole process. Well, not all of it. While he was going through it, he was trying to go through the proper channels, didn't want to do it. You probably saw it on the news a while ago. And they put him in jail and took his daughter and forced her to get vaccinated. Wow. Well, he's trying to go through the logical steps required by law to express his religious beliefs. This is where we're going with vaccinations. So if you talk about death rates of this crazy coronavirus, people get afraid. First of all, you go back to all of our terrorist reactions. I've mentioned this. I have heard so many people say, "I don't care what they do to me when I fly, as long as I'm safe." Well, you don't know if you're safe. What you really mean, as long as they tell me I'm safe. This practice is becoming common everywhere. It's a common practice in cancer treatment. Oncologists have been trained to say, if you do not do what I say when I say it right away, you will die. Well, that's scary. People are terrified of death. They're like, if you don't give up all these civil rights, you could die by terrorist act. Right? But here's the problem. What is the greatest loss in a spiritual perspective of man? Is it the loss of life, the loss of liberty, the loss of spirituality? I mean, think about it. In this nation, we have set ourselves up. What is the greatest privilege, the greatest right, the greatest benefit that America's built on? Liberty, freedom. Abraham Lincoln said, better 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be incarcerated. People are like, oh, I don't know if I agree with that. You know, well, you know what? I mean, there is a scripture, a commandment that says, do not bear false witness. That is often the case when people go to prison. Back in the 90s when they came out with DNA and Clinton did everything he could to stomp on it because he had people planted in prison that were going to get out. And he said, if you've already had your appeal, he pushed through this crazy law. It sat there through Bush and as an executive order. And then it was one of the very first things Obama did to help cover up, you know, the Clinton faux pas. I mean, you talk about arrogance. Hillary just came out with this pseudo documentary on what, Hulu or whatever it's called. Oh, you know, just self-propagation, bloviation, trying to what? Present herself as this great future candidate. She's got to have that office. She can't live without it. She can't believe she lost. She can't believe Trump pounded her. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. They want that power. Just as the Secretary of State, she, you know, between that and her, after her husband was in office, they went from basically zero to a net worth of $320 million. They want power, folks. And like I said, so the whole concept of the of Lincoln saying better 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be incarcerated. The question I ask you, is it better that 100,000, you know, let's say this. Is it better that 1 million men, let's say there was 300 people a year killed in terrorist attacks, and there's not, God forbid, but just hypothetically. Is it better that a million men, humans, people, maintain freedom and liberty for one who gives his life? Or is it better that 1 million men and people lose their liberty and their freedom to save one life? The difference between godless and God-filled government is the assumption in a God government, God-filled, God-backed, God-based, God-built, whatever you want to call it, our country, the way it's written, the Republic of America, is based on the fact that the greatest gift of all is liberty. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Notice pursuit of happiness. Utilitarianism says whatever gives the majority the greater good or the greater sense of good is, and it uses the word happiness in the definition. Happiness. That is what's best for society. So basically, you no longer care about the one innocent man. You care about the masses. That is exactly what tyrannical oligarchies rely on. You know, they get people up in arms. They get the Nazis get, you know, their people raging against the Jews for a number of reasons. The people do the dirty work for them. It gives government more power and authority. It's called, this is it again, Hegelian dialectic. Okay? Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. You got to think about that. And I've explained what it means. And Hegel invented it, and it was used practically or well, efficiently, effectively by the Nazis and many other tyrannical leaders throughout society. And it basically says, let me see if I can find it. I know what I know it knows. How about that? I know what I know what I know. So here, let me get back to this corona thing, just in case. And of course, time is ticking. So let's go down this. I just kind of hung this out just a little too long. So when we hear about the coronavirus-induced deaths, people go on red alert. So let me contextualize some of these numbers for you that I've dug out. So I've got these below. I've got a list of compared populations. I know China versus the world, and infectious diseases don't maintain consistent daily averages, but the point still stands, okay? On the worst days for coronavirus in China, as of February 10th, 2020, well, on February 10th, 2020, 108 people died. Okay? On a given day, that's the worst day in China. On a given day globally, take a guess on a given day. Just put a number in your head. How many people die a day of cancer? This is around the world. Every day, every day, every day, by average, 26,283 people die of cancer. How have we done in treating cancer? Not too well, but we've sure made it profitable. We have our medical system is now approaching one-fifth of the U.S. GDP. Trillions a year. How effective are they? Not very. You go to oncologists, they tell you, hey, you know, you got to try this, or you got to do what I say, or you're not going to live, and da-da-da-da-da, no matter what. Poison, poison, poison. The cut, burn, poison thing's been going on forever. Fear, fear, fear. But compare those numbers. The worst day ever for coronavirus was 108. The average day, globally, 26,283 for cancer. How about cardiovascular disease? 49,041 people a day. 49,000 people a day. How about diabetes? 4,383 people die per day. 2,191 suicides a day. Guess how many people die a day from mosquitoes? 24,070. I'm sorry, 2,740. I screwed that up. 2,740 people die a day from mosquitoes. How many people get killed every day globally by other humans? 1,287 people die every day from homicide, right? When you're saying, oh, should I travel? What about my pantry? Do I load it up? Is the world coming to an end? You just look at the data on how the coronavirus compares to the influenza, the flu. There's 1,000 times more deaths from the regular flu as of March 7th as there has been from coronavirus. It's just a flu, right? According to a Harvard medical professional, I'm looking here, his professor at Harvard, whatever, clinical director of division and such and such and so on show, here's some information which I'm short on time. The COVID-19 virus, which is coronavirus, has come out of left field and basically the media has left everybody blindsided. The lack of knowledge. People fear what they don't understand. If you don't understand something, you tend to fear it. If you're raised way too sheltered, or, you know, you just learn things you don't understand. That's where racism and things like that come in. So during the 2017 and 2018 flu season, which the CDC has figures on, the U.S. It put the U.S. influenza deaths at 80,000 people. So, and the global estimates indicate anywhere between 300 and 650,000 influenza-associated deaths just from respiratory causes alone. In terms of the deaths from influenza-induced lower respiratory tract infections, 2019 study estimated between 99 and 200,000 deaths. You know, so the following year, the CDC estimated 35.5 million Americans fell ill with the flu, which resulted in 490,600 hospitalizations, 34,200 deaths in the U.S. alone. Just since last October, the regular flu influenza has infected as many as 49 million people and killed between 20 and 52,000. The range is because of bad record keeping in other nations, further complications. You could be sick and struggling, and then boom, you get the flu, and that's all it took to tip you over. And that's usually the case with about everything. Drug deaths, they never account for, you know, the other five chemicals in their system and everything. That's one of the problems with these kinds of statistics. So on a global scale, by comparison, the coronavirus outbreak has infected over 90,000 people as of 2 days ago, which resulted in 3,462 deaths globally. So the fatality rate of coronavirus appears to be slightly higher than that of typical flu, which ranges from 1.4 to 3%, depending on who's calculating. The toll of the common flu is staggeringly higher than that of coronavirus. So, you know, they have to say, is it warranted? Well, sure, because it does kill. But knowing the numbers, it gives you a good idea, folks. And I've got a bunch of other information and data I don't have time to get to, obviously. But just remember, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, is getting $8.3 billion to fund its coronavirus eradication efforts, which you appear have been intentionally delayed in order to attain this massive mound of cash. Okay? According to Trump, the CDC's acquisition of all this taxpayer money, some of which is also going to the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Homeland Security, will ensure that these agencies, quote, have the resources they need to keep America safe and keep the risk to workers and families very low. $8.3 billion. I wish I could comprehend what that really is. $83,000 million. And they say, oh, this is great news for our health, our economy, and our nation, says Trump. You know, and he has to do this, folks. He has to play along. He can't be, you know, if he says, hey, this is overblown, okay, everything's wrong with him, and if it goes crazy, he's out, you know, and I mean, et cetera. I get all that. And it's sad that we're there. We're not seeking the truth. We're seeking partisan, you know, bias is what we're really seeking. We want us to fall apart, and a lot of people are waiting for it. So remember that. When you're listening to this stuff, don't be afraid. Do not be afraid. This thing, now, if it ends up, you know, going crazy, then we'll deal with that. But I don't think this is the one. I think there might be one coming. I don't think it's foolish to be prepared. I know people pack their pantries with timeless food and everything. Yes, sure, you should anyway in America. We're one of the most foolish countries. Our grocery stores have, on average, they say, maximum 3 days food supply. We're one of the only countries that thinks we're invincible. We don't understand what can happen. So, yeah, do we need to be prepared all the time? I mean, we should be anyway. That's what I help with financially. You get hard liquid assets. People want this, they want that, they want extreme, they want survivalist. Great, that's part of the portfolio. We build nice portfolios. There will be survival stuff in there, and then just long-term holdings, secure, you know, precious metals, assets. And then, you know, good times, bad times, in between times, short, medium, and long-term investing approaches. That's what we do. So I would say just don't let the fear drive you. Be wise. Trust in God. Realize the media can go over the top on stuff. And I know it's hard to be that guy that doesn't go along, but give it a shot. So once again, we are wrapping up. I appreciate you tuning in. Take care. God bless. And don't forget about us. Give us a call. Let us help you out. Thanks. Bye-bye.